You're listening to the Mako Minute, the 482nd Fighter Wing Podcast. In this episode, we'll talk about what's going on around the wing and talk to Captain Brandon Chisholm from Security Forces. You're going to hear about how to overcome adversity, unconventional ways to become a pilot in the military, and how to defuse a bomb with a fishhook. Right now, we're going to head on over to Custer's Corner.
Hey everyone, welcome to the second episode of Custer's Corner. I'm Staff Sergeant Nicholas Swanson, and today I'm joined by our wing commander, Colonel Brandon Kelly. Thank you for being here.
Always. This is fun. Second episode here, second better than first, and it'll get better as we keep going.
Absolutely. So let's start off with the big one, Miami Air and Sea Show. You were front and center. What's the most that stood out to you?
One, the Makos, obviously the Makos and what they did and supported. The entire base, we hosted every aircraft that was part of that, pretty much from the bombers, other than the B-2, of course, it flew in, and the fighters that were part of that. And just the dedication of our airmen giving up a good chunk of their holiday weekend to support that. That's what stood out absolutely the most to me.
That's awesome. You did interviews during it?
We did. We sat down with Senator Scott from Florida, talk about future fighter mission. Lieutenant General Healy was there, our commander of Air Force Reserve Command. A lot about the Makos, of course, bragging on us, talking about the deployable combat wing coming up.
So speaking of deployments, moving forward on future events, what news do you have for us on that?
Yeah, you bet. First, speaking of deployments, I always want to recognize our folks who are downrange. We have about 50 members from the 70th Aerial Report Squadron in CENTCOM right now, and always thinking about those folks. I know they're working care packages, I think, right now to send them, but always thinking of their family as they're away and thoughts and our prayers. For us, obviously, deployable combat wing, you've heard for a year. You're going to keep hearing as we move towards that. I've named most of our A staff, so command and control echelon, and how that works. We'll probably get a commander's call out here late summer, early fall, just to talk to the wing and open up for questions. Ultimately, it boils down to what I've always said. 93% of the wing is going to stay absolutely who they are, where they are, doing exactly what they do, being experts in their AFSCs. Where that will take us as we do this, we're moving into November. From November UTA into a directed annual tour about a week after that, where we're going to do a combat readiness exercise with the command and control, A staff, our combat airbase squadron, the CABS, and then the mission gen force element will stay down here at MOB, Main Operating Base Homestead, with them and the MSTs, mission support teams there, and then forward deploy for about 2 weeks. And then that will extend into Bamboo Eagle, which is a very large force exercise, which involves about 10,000 people from across the Air Force. So Google it. It's pretty cool. It is an Air Combat Command led thing that we were trying to work our way into. So our MGFE will have to go out for about 2 weeks prior to that and do red flag stuff, if you will. Then everything we did in the combat readiness exercise that we talked about a minute ago, we'll then forward deploy to a location we don't know we are with, and we'll set up our deployable combat wing with our CABS, and they will be doing, when the runway, notionally gets blown up, they'll have to go out and fix it. We'll have to deliver rescue assets and control all that. That will then lead us into, we're a certified deployable combat wing, and then my goal there is, then we have about 6 months to do final preparations, and really is for you guys to be able to stay home with your family.
In talking about these exercises coming up, why is it important for the airmen to take these seriously and understand the importance of it?
Yeah, great question. We always, train how you fight. I've heard through my whole career. One, it's really fun to me. This is really cool stuff on a tactical level. So I get to sit behind my desk, and I joke, I sign emails and forward them a lot. That's what I do. But getting out amongst the airmen and seeing you guys do exactly what you've trained to do, not only in your own AFSC, but then seeing how all those mesh as a whole team. Because I think most of you guys know at this point where the Air Force, anytime you've deployed, you met your folks there from all over the world. We are equipping, training together failing forward, as I say in my family, we fail, we learn, we move forward. And we take that as an entire unit of almost 1,000 folks from here, and we go to the same location. We already know our personalities, how we do things, how we don't do things. And why is that important is you already got your camaraderie built, you got your teamwork built, and you're showing a true example of how you can mesh everyone across the wing. It's not your little stovepipe, your little stovepipe. It is absolutely one team to make all this happen. That's why it's important. When I say faith, family, mission, and how do you get the mission done? First, be an expert in your FSC. This is where all that comes to fruition, and we get to show that and show it to the world.
Great. Love to hear it. Thank you for joining us. Anything else from you, sir?
That's it. Custer's out.
All right. Thank you.
Brandon Chisholm, a rank-wise Captain Chisholm, which is very weird to say since that is as of April 16th, recently Captain.
Congratulations.
Thank you, by the way. So as far as the base goes, I'm the Operations for Security Forces.
Okay. Is it fair to say the Security Forces, I mean, you guys are the cops?
I think that's perfect.
But you do a lot more.
As the career field does a bit of a pivot, we're getting away from primarily cop, if that makes sense. Law enforcement will eventually become a special portion of security forces the career field as a whole will be focusing on base security-based defense.
Okay.
Traditionally, we're known as cops, and the LE thing is kind of what everybody knows us for. Unfortunately, the writing of the tickets, the maintaining of speed limits, the people who come get you from downtown when you've gotten a little too drunk or belligerent, that's us.
Yeah.
That's us.
Yeah. But that's not really the function. Like, if you guys go downrange, there's a little bit more than just writing tickets at that point, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. A biggest portion for us specific to the Air Force is obviously base defense and the base defense plan for everything from ensuring that in the event of an overrun or we're being attacked by hostile forces, we can hold off those forces long enough for everybody else on base to do their job and specifically to get pilots in the air and to maintain the brevity of the runway. So along that and then moving outward from that scenario to maintaining the security and integrity of the defense, our own outside defense line of checking and making sure people who try to access the base actually are allowed access to the base, as well as running down any potential leads and working in conjunction with OSI. I mean, the job would be a bit more robust, but honestly, security and defense is still the focus of the job.
So just a couple responsibilities, that's it, right? No big deal.
No, you know, just walking apart.
Nothing serious, right?
I mean, no.
But you haven't been in security forces the whole time.
I have not, and I'm still learning. Honestly, to me, I'm drinking from the fire hose. In my humble opinion, coming in as a prior enlisted guy from a different career field and then learning security forces from the old side is kind of like bypassing, or if you will, kind of cheat code to the building blocks that allow my airmen and my NCOs to be as good as they are.
Right.
Every day, I think we have a great relationship with each other. I'm quick to remind them that I am learning from them. Like, I get it that I'm prior EOD. I get it that I've served in a variety of ranks. But at the end of the day, if somebody asks me a security forces specific question, it's an expertise-based thing, I'm quicker to ask one of my staff and to just say, this is what we do. They've been doing it. They've cut their teeth in it. And
right.
So I'm still learning. And I'll always learn, obviously, but I am far from expertise in my field.
One of the things you said that really kind of caught my ear was that you said that you're quicker to go to your non-commissioned officers.
Absolutely.
And get their information on the best way to tackle a particular problem. Would you say that your experience as being prior enlisted, so you're prior enlisted, you're now an officer, but your experience as being prior enlisted taught you that a good officer is gonna communicate first with non-commissioned officers?
Some of the officers that I admired most are the ones that I thought had my interest in line with the mission, like how to get the mission done, but also take care of their guys. I noticed the commonality with them all was their focus and their ability to not only lead and motivate us, but also take anything we brought to them and use it. One of my mentors from when I was an instructor in EOD school was a Marine officer. He kind of cut his teeth on his ability. He was like, my job is to make sure my senior NCOs and my NCOs have everything they need to complete the mission. He said, in an ideal world or an ideal military construct, you don't need the officer. The officers aren't actually doing the work. The NCOs to train, equip, and mobilize our guys to be able to do whatever the job is. Ideally, you need me to go into these rooms, because we are still in military ran by officers, and say, I need money for my guys for this. I need this equipment. I need this budget. I need this building. Whatever this whiz bang idea is, I need that there. Well, if I'm not plugged in with my guys, if I'm not asking my guys these questions, if I'm not in communication with my senior NCOs and my NCOs, when my group commander asks me, what is it you guys need? I'm kind of pulling stuff out of my own butt versus what we actually need. That is my grounding tool. As long as my guys are thriving, if my guys are doing well, that'll reflect in my own report. Mm-hmm. If my guys are struggling, it should look like I'm struggling, and I think it will. My only job is to make sure my guys have everything they need.
That's excellent. That's excellent. And real quick about your prior career. So EOD, and for anybody listening who doesn't know, that's Explosive Ordnance Disposal. So, you know, another walk in the park job.
Good day.
We're going to have another conversation about how he handles stress, because he's doing it really well. So, I mean, let me go defuse this bomb and, oh, what, base security? Yeah, lead the forces. Yeah, I can do that too. No problem.
Somebody's got to do it, right? The kind of the commonality, and I've said this before, people give me crap about it. I got it from my instructors. With EOD, if things go absolutely wrong, it's no longer my problem. Whether I'm hurt or no longer existing, it's not my problem. It's somebody else's problem.
I mean, it's kind of funny the way you say it, and it makes you kind of want to laugh. But at the same time, it's a bit of a sobering thought when you think about it.
So, it's a great job. Some of the best years of my life in the military were in EOD. I'm around some amazing people. I just came back from the retirement of Master Sergeant Russell Richard out of the EOD flight. Had a great time. Russ has been a long time. I call him big brother and mentor to me. Russ was there when I first stepped into Eglin to start my process to become a tech. To this day, I have the utmost respect for Senior Master Sergeant Kaufman, soon to be Chief Kaufman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he got picked up for the job.
Oh, so wow.
I have the utmost respect for those guys out there. I love them to death. I love that job. I learned a lot from that job. But EOD kind of teaches you to not just think outside the box, but the second and third, fourth and fifth order effects of what your actions can cause or what'll come from that. I'm forever grateful for that.
When you talk about thinking outside of the box, do you have any real world examples of where you can paint a picture of what you mean by that? You were deployed as EOD. Can you think of any situations where you were just like, man, I'm really going to have to use this noodle between my ears right now?
That's fair. For me, it was one I kind of witnessed. The tools you use to deal with or mitigate a hazard, the world is your oyster. Whatever you have available with you on your person and also in the world right now, it's kind of cliche, but I'll say MacGyver, for instance. Okay. My team leader was a guy from Eglin. Mm-hmm. He cut his teeth at Eglin. He, multiple deployments, he kind of learned his craft while working at Eglin. And so he shows up in Afghanistan he's also an avid outdoorsman. He's a big hunter, big fisherman. So he shows up in Afghanistan with full-grade shark hooks from fishing. These are heavy metal, triple-barbed shark hooks.
Like the big, three, 4-inch fishing hook things. Yeah.
And the first time I see him, I'm like, what's that? He was like, it's a shark hook. I was like, color me intrigued.
Like, did you get the wrong itinerary? We're under the ocean.
Why do you have shark hooks in Afghanistan? He was like, well, you'll see. Trust me, you'll see. So, eventually the time comes, we're out on the call and we're dismounted, so we're with backpacks, no bomb suit, no truck. We're just on foot. It's his job now to mitigate this IED threat so that us and the team that we're attached to can move on about our business. He sweeps his way to it, checks around it, does all of his cursory things, and then sees what he's looking at pressure plate-wise, and then hooks into it with the shark hook, walks back, trailing off line the entire time, and then slowly removes it. And by the way, he'd also use the hemostat to separate the initial line, and he'd use a J-hook to cut. So in one pull, he cut the initiator, separated the pressure plate from the main charge, and then used a shark hook to pull the plate to him. So when he was finished, he was holding a hemostat that had the battery, holding the pressure plate, and the charge was downrange. And then he went back down and countercharged, blew up the charge, and he was like, this is why I have shark hooks. And I was like,
wow.
And, again, to hear there was a guy that showed up in Afghanistan with shark hooks, I'm like, what? And then when I saw it in action, I was like, okay, I was playing checkers. This guy's playing chess, and I clearly need to watch him work
yeah.
for the next few months. I tried to soak up everything I could from him. He had a particular way about doing it. You contrast that with a guy like Senior Kaufman, who is more hands-on, but his technique is flawless. How he goes about, how he separates, how he walks through, how he taught. He's thought 17 layers through the process by the time you see him step out of the truck. And so outside of somebody popping up and shooting, he's ready to go. So to watch these two very different techniques and approaches move down range and kind of mastermind their way through what they're doing. For a young tech, it was Bible study for me. Like, I'm just there wide eyes, just taking everything in. It was great.
Was there anything else from any of your other time before we go back to talking about your current position? And yeah. Is there anything else from your time deployed as explosive ordnance disposal that you want to talk about or tell us anything about, or funny stories? I mean, anything you want to share?
I mean, you know, funny stories, there's always how I did something stupid. We were doing a counter charge. I had my head poked out of the top of a turret on a charge that we were probably a little too close to. It was a little bigger than I had actually kind of taken it into consideration.
And the counter charge is?
Us putting explosives on their explosives to make them go boom and go away.
Putting a bomb on a bomb. Okay.
So there's no problem that can't be solved with the proper amount of high explosives. It's absolute science.
It would do the dishes too, right?
What dishes?
Exactly.
Got a body needs bearing? What body?
Yeah.
It works. It just works.
So you popped your head out.
Yeah, I had my head out the turret. I probably should have closed the door with my head inside the turret, but I didn't. And you know, when I initiated the charge, it's that old sound we all know of, like firing a weapon with no ear pro. Ooh.
Oh yeah.
Immediately. Bell rung, little woozy, like, oh. And my team lead looked up. He was like, Chisholm, did you have your head out the door? I did. I didn't do that again. I learned the hard way on that one. Lessons were learned. Eggs were scrambled and things moved on.
It's like that old saying, you know, some people learn things by reading it. Other people learn things by being told. And the rest of us just have to touch the electric fence to find out.
100%. Yeah. My aunt always called it a bought lesson is better than a told one. You know, those ones you have to pay for. Those are the ones they stick with you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They sure do. I got a few scars for some lessons that I've learned.
100%.
Yeah. So. A little bit about your current position in security forces now and stuff like that. So you're in a full-time slot down here, right?
Yep, AGR slot. Yes, sir.
Active Guard Reserve. And so do you live locally?
Yes and no. I'm in Tamiami. There's a guy that I found on rent.com, and he owns a few homes in the area. He is known for renting out rooms. He was like, this is how I meet people. I rent out rooms, put them on short-term leases, and if they stay for 3 months, they stay for 3. Some dudes stay for 8 years, and you know, they're here too. And which worked for me because I was looking for a cheap option. For $800 a month, I rent a room. I'm a geo bash in that sense. However, my wife and daughter are in the Atlanta area.
Okay. So that's gotta be a challenge in itself.
It is, but you know, Sim Gumby, man, always flexible. We figure it out. So right about the time we were planning on how to make this work, when I was applying for the AZR slot, and my wife's in Atlanta and that's going to be in Miami, how we going to make this work, I get this flash pop across my screen called Frontier did this thing that popped up, and it was essentially, it was a getaway pass or something like that. And I was like, all right, let's just look into this. And at that time, it was $6.99. You purchase it, and then for the whole year, if you bought a ticket within 24 hours of flight, you could get minimal fees on the ticket and fly anywhere you want, anywhere that Frontier flew. And I was like, all right, let's see what this is about.
Yeah.
So once the dates opened up, I knew I wanted to leave on a Friday. Technically, 24 hours of Friday is Thursday. So at 12:01 a.m. on Thursday, I looked in and it said I could fly Friday at like 8 o'clock at night for $15. I was like, bought. And that's been the game.
Yeah.
And so I do one-way flights home for less than what it would cost me to put a quarter tank of gas in my car.
Yeah.
And then I come back usually Sunday night.
You know, and to add on that, because I said it can't be easy, I didn't necessarily mean on you.
Right.
I mean, because you're having a wife and kid.
Yep.
I always find that when we put the uniform on and walk out the door, that's the easy part for us.
100%.
I mean, because they're still sitting at home, and now there's this void where you were. Your wife's got to be an amazing person.
Wife's a trooper, first of all. My wife's a first-rate trooper. I keep trying to coax her into joining the JAG Corps, but she's not having it.
My wife doesn't listen to me either.
And probably for the better, if we're honest. They're not listening for a reason, and we should just let it go, but we're not going to. When I first brought the idea of me potentially applying and maybe getting this position, and they were like, all right, so when are you going to be home? How often are you coming home? What are we talking about? I've talked to my commander about it. If this is something you're okay with me doing, I can be home every week. Sometimes I can take leave and be home for longer than the weekend. I was like, you know, XYZ pops up. I can just pop up home. You need me to pop up. I can do that. But it does mean you're toting the load. I need to know how you feel about toting the load. Is it going to be a problem? Yes, I know you're already used to toting the load, but let's have this conversation. At first, she was apprehensive about it. You know, we've had a couple rough patches. It is what it is.
Yeah. But, well, it's marriage,
know,
right?
Yeah, 100%. It ebbs and flows. And so she's like, all right, I will give it a trial. Let's see how it goes. Let's see how much you come back. Let's see how long you stay. Let's see where your head is when you're home. And so, at first, I said it probably the first 6 months. If I didn't have obligations here, obviously UTA weekends.
Right. The drill weekends, you got
to
be here.
But when I didn't have obligations that required me to be in South Florida, I was in Atlanta. I didn't go home and hang out with my parents. I didn't go home and hang out with my boys. I was at home. I was either with my daughter doing homework or doing stuff around the house.
The honey-do list.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. Trying to let her get out. And she was like, okay. I can work with this. Got kind of settled into the role. My order started, and then we started looking for a home. So when it came time to purchase, bought a house and, you know, put it a little bit closer in terms of places, schools we were looking at, and what was going to be beneficial for her. Thus far, it's worked out. I'm sure we'll hit another patch at some point, but right now, things are rolling.
Well, it's life.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, like you said, it ebbs and flows. A funny thing happened to me this week. So I'm a traditional reservist, right?
Right on.
1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. So I'm down here on my annual tour, part of my 2 weeks a year commitment. I live just with no traffic. It's an hour and 10 minute drive north. But it's just far enough that I can't really commute, especially if there's traffic, then it's 2 hours to get home.
100%.
So
know that game.
Yeah. But my son all year long, he's part of this theater group, and his older sister, my daughter, she is one of the counselors that helps put this theater group on. The play that they put on, which is Shrek the Musical.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's hysterical. The play they put on was last night. Yeah. Exactly. The look on your face says it all.
You've been running and gunning.
So I left here at the end of the duty day. It was about a 2 hour ride and I went straight to the theater, saw the play, kissed everybody, and got back in my car and drove back down here. Now, I'm not trying to talk about my struggles here. What I'm trying to talk about is one of the things that made it all worthwhile. And you probably have this feeling too. The hug you get. Isn't that the best feeling 100%. In the world? And they scream your name.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'm a kind of a car nerd. I'm trying to goad my daughter into being one. Car nerd, like cars. What I tell people is all men are nerds. You just have to figure out what it is we nerd out about. We're all nerds in some capacity, whether it's cars, video games, computers, cameras, photography.
If you can tell me who played third base for the Pirates in 1967.
You lost me at third base.
But you're a nerd if you can say that. You're not a sports fan. You're a nerd.
We all have our things. I wouldn't put her in the class of nerddom, but she enjoys certain aspects of cars. Some time ago, I bought an older convertible. And by far, Dad, when you bring the convertible back home? Because all she wants to do is me drop the top so she can ride in the back seat, throw her hands in there, and us go on the back row. She will be with me for burning 4 tanks of gas at once. Just let her stop and use the restroom, and she's good.
Yeah.
Trust me. We're locked in on that one.
Nickname her GTO, gas, tire, and oil. Let's go, Daddy.
Yeah. Stop, get me a Sprite. Let me get a Snicker bar, and game on. Let's go.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, question that came up when I was just jotting some notes down before this interview, something I was thinking about. So you come from EOD.
Yep.
Which is
not my first career.
There's more.
So I assumed we even got here, not even because of my position, but because maybe you'd heard some of the tall, horrible tales of what I call the tree of terrible, of how my military career.
The tree of terrible.
Because, you know, trees have branches, and you could just climb down the tree, or you could fall and hit multiple branches like I did. That makes for an interesting story, or at least a tale of what not to do.
Right.
So my journey starts at West Point and then enlisted in the Air Force as a nuke maintainer and then EOD. So EOD's down the road.
Yeah. So you started at West Point.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out for you.
I got kicked out.
Yeah. Well, at least you're honest about it. I mean, it's not really something to laugh about it, but.
No, we can laugh about it. Yeah. That's actually, two nights ago, I was talking to my dad about this because I told him, I was like, Dad, 40 plus year old me can look back and say, had I stayed the course and finished West Point, I would have been likely killed in combat at some point earlier in my career, or B, done made some grave error in the land of the ladies and killed my career early in my career, or a combination of A and B, and ended up in the same spot regardless. I needed some more time in the oven. Getting kicked out, going back home, having to work a job that I hated, and then making some questionable decisions and realizing, like, if this keeps up, this path is going one way. Coming back into the military and, you know, kind of just starting from scratch and figuring it out, that's probably the best thing that could happen, because I was on a good path. And I tell people to this day, I have the utmost respect for Academy grads. West Point always has a special place in my heart. I wish I had finished, but had I finished, it'd have been bad. You couldn't tell me a thing already.
So you knew it all already.
You needed some adjustment. Wow, it's tragic that I got booted. I needed to be booted. This is what it is.
Yeah, that really speaks to a lot of the person you are today, though.
Gotcha.
I mean, because you've got to be one of the most personable people on the base. Anybody can come up and talk to you and have a conversation with you. And it's, I mean, that's, I think that really means a lot.
Appreciate it.
That actually speaks a lot to the question. So, coming from your real world experience in EOD as enlisted, and then you get a commission and come over here to security forces, right? And so now you're having to sit in that officer role. And some of the people here knew you as EOD before you first put on lieutenant. What is that feeling where you're sort of promoted amongst your peers kind of thing? Do people treat you different?
To me, at least partially, there's no difference as far as the promotion. That's the way of the military. You know, from the east side, there are those of us who stay E4s or senior airmen for quite a bit longer than some of our peers. And then there's the blaze through the first 5-6 ranks like it was nothing. So that's the way it works. 1 week we go drink together. The next week you're my soup. Except on the east side, you don't get the opportunity to just be in another shop now, because you put on staff or tech, or you made staff tech quickly, and now you're a master. It's your job to be in charge. I would say, at least the way the reserves work, they're not quick to push. As a matter of fact, it's pretty hard to get put back in charge of people that you were formerly working with or for.
Right.
And so, yes, there are people I know that knew me as tech sergeant, staff sergeant, various levels, but there's been no treatment. And then I happened to start an organization where, at that time, Senior Romeo, now retired, had the wherewithal to be like, hey, I know you want to come over and train and start working with the guys. He's like, they need to know you as lieutenant. Don't come here as sergeant first. I was like, all right, Rob. So I trusted his wisdom, same way I do now with all of my other senior NCOs and NCOs. But
yeah,
I think I was probably sheltered from any negative effects of ranking up and being old now versus what I used to be, and being old versus what you get on the east side. Because like you said, that happens every day on the enlisted side. Well, first of the month, you find out who's going to be promoted above everybody else. If we're doing it the way we're supposed to be, if that person just put on staff or put on tech, they now technically outrank on everybody and are to be listened to and respected as such.
Yeah, and I think your humble attitude towards most things, I think, has definitely got you a long way. Which leads me to the next one. If you had any mentor nuggets, if anybody's listening to this and they're looking at your career and like, wow, this guy is really doing well, what piece of advice would you give to somebody?
I'd say whoever it is you're looking at, especially if it's me, come talk to me. Let's talk about Air Force shortcuts. Please don't learn the hard lessons the wrong way. In any high school or college kid that listened to me, it's like, for instance, thinking about flying, like, hey, you can go to the academy, and that is a wonderful pipeline. Again, you know how I feel about the academy. But if your true dream is, for instance, to fly a fighter, go get your pilot's license, and let's find a mentor somewhere on this base so we can get you in touch with the ops group so you can start having these conversations. They have open AGR slots for our fighter squadron here right now.
Really?
And so if you can apply through those guys and they'll bless you, you're going to go into the pipeline knowing you're going to fly F-16s at Homestead versus whatever version of maybe you'll get going through the academy. One of the colonels, he was out, he's like, hey, the year before him, nobody got fighter slots. His year got 4. And then the year after him, nobody got them. And they went to the Air Force Academy. So so it's like, but that's, if you haven't been in, if you don't know that the reserves have AGR slots, that, and if you go through their AGR program, go through their rush program, that you'll end up directly in line for a fighter, F-16 here, or maybe 18s if you're at Whiteman, or F-35s if you can somehow pull off Hawaii, or F-15s in Massachusetts. If you don't know that, you're left to find that out later on after you've already made certain decisions. So go talk to these people. If you're like, hey, what do you know? Can I get a bit of your time? Absolutely, ask for these hacks. After your years in the military, I'm sure there are certain things you know, not just about your own career field, but other career fields you've been around. It's like, hey, here's how you set yourself up for success so you can kind of skip and not have to learn some of these things the hard way.
Well, I was maintenance before I was public affairs. Right. And one of the things I try to tell people all the time is that I'm a mechanic in the civilian world. I'm an aircraft mechanic in the civilian world. I was able to get my civilian certificate because of my experience in the military. I didn't have to go to another school. I showed up to the FAA with my DD-214 and they looked at it and they said, you're clear to take the test. And then bam, I had my airframe power plant certificate. And then I took that out into the world and applied in person. I just knocked on doors. Hey, you guys hiring? And they said, do you have an A&P? And I said, yes, I do. They said, come on in and talk to me.
Stuff like that. Like just, you know, so there was a master, he's now a master sergeant. He may actually be senior master sergeant Cohen. Mm-hmm. He was a EOD tech with us here. Cohen had amassed a crap ton of flight hours on the private side and originally was going for one of these slots here and just got offered a great private flying job and ended up taking that job. But he was on track to fly. This was when General Piff was still here. Piff had signed off on this package.
You know? Oh, wow.
He had one of like five open slots.
Yeah.
So, you know, like it's...
For anybody listening to this... Even if you don't want to fly yourself, I want you to remember this episode and what you heard here. And when you hear somebody say they want to fly fighter jets, remember what we just talked about because you can spread this information.
100%.
You can really change some people's lives.
One more nugget on that before you close out.
No, I'm not going anywhere.
Because these are like the nuggets I try to give to high school and college kids all the time. Like, for instance, if I say to you, I want to go be a Marine officer, are you automatically thinking that I want to fly?
No.
Right. And I haven't checked the numbers lately, but... Typically, in a normal year, Marines are the only branch that have pilot slots that go unfilled because usually if some kid of any age or any gender says they want to be a Marine officer, it's not because their parents flew for the Marines. It's because they fought for the Marines and they're thinking usually for some version of the ground.
Right.
And even that small percentage that wants to fly is thinking choppers.
Right.
But they fly the same airframes as the Navy.
Right.
So...
You know, why not?
Why everybody else is trying to get into Air Force Academy to go fly. Like, go to the Naval Academy, be a Marine. I'm not saying it's easy. Like, let's be fair. There's nothing easy about the Marines.
Yeah.
But there's one service that has flight slots that don't get applied for, and it's them. It's really? Crazy to me.
That's wild.
But, you know, Navy and Air Force, we're beating people back. No, we're not taking any pilots this year.
It's, yeah. But the Marine Corps goes aboard ship just like the Navy does.
100%. And so it's just stuff like that. And I use that one because in the Air Force, it's always easy to highlight stuff like flying. It's easy because that's how we work. Everything we do is around the support of flight.
Yeah.
And so when I use that to paint the picture to people, it's like, hey, if this is something you're considering, don't think, well, I didn't go to the academy. I don't have a chance. It's like, no, you have a really good chance. There's some work you have to do. Those guys' job isn't easy. It's not easy to be a pilot. It's a hard job, but if that's something you want. There's multiple ways to skin this cat. Please get after it.
Well, is there anything else you want to add to this? Anything that we talked about or didn't talk about? Is there anything else that you want to add?
Yeah, that's just the tip of the iceberg. We got a bunch of jobs and stuff that people can go after. Right now, all the branches are hurting for people.
So yeah.
Even when people tell me they don't want to fly, whether they want to be medical, be a ground trooper, try security forces, be a cop, what does that avenue look like? I love to talk about what the Air Force can do for people. I take any opportunity somebody's willing to ask me about, like, let's have this conversation. I realize now I'm starting to be the old geezer. I mean, I've been in Air Force-wise, I've been in since January of 04. You count West Point, that goes back to July of 02. So
yeah, it's been more than a minute, yeah, right?
I'm certified graybeard at this stage, which is fine. But I enjoy talking about it because the Air Force has been, for me, it's 4 degrees and multiple career pivots, a couple of deployments, a couple of surgeries, because, you know, I've just tried to break myself a couple of times.
Yeah.
I've been very well handled and maintained by the Air Force. And I try my best to put that out for people. It's not that I'm on some recruiting pitch, but if you don't have anything else going on, if you've been thinking about it, like,
yeah,
let me tell you the ways.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of jobs out there.
100%.
Careers.
And they're wonderful. Like, and they're, like, you can, I mean, yeah, yes, we're going to get some time out of you, 100%. Mm-hmm. We're going mm-hmm. to get our 6 years or whatever it is. But in that time, you can get quite a bit out of us if you do it right.
Yeah. And if you end up going to basic training, you get paid to work out. That's kind of cool.
Three square meals a day. There's a dude that yells every now and then. I mean, who hasn't dealt with a little yelling in their life?
I went to basic. I was already married with two kids at that time. So when I got to basic, I already owned my own home and all that. So I got to basic and I very quickly realized, I was like, man, I don't even have to think about what I'm going to wear. They're going to tell me what I'm going to wear, when I'm going to eat, what we're going to do today, when I'm going to sleep, when I'm waking up. I was like, it's been so long since I didn't have to make decisions.
Right on. Like, it's cheat code.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, hey, well, thanks for coming in and talk to us, Captain. I really appreciate it. This was great. I think we should try to schedule a time where we can get you back in here and maybe talk about some other stuff. Yeah. You are a wealth of knowledge and information. I got to tell you, I'm not just saying this because I got like some kind of bro crush on you here, but you're actually very inspirational to be around, just to hang around. So it's been really great, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Well, I can't wait to come back. It's been great.
That about wraps it up for this episode. If you'd like more content from the 42nd Fighter Wing, be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. We'll see you next time on the Mako Minute.